Governor Holcomb lifts almost all COVID restrictions, a Supreme Court vacancy, plus the future of abortion rights and more on Indiana Week in Review, the week ending September 25th, 2020.
Indiana Week in Review is made possible by the supporters of Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations and by Ice Miller. Ice Miller is a full-service law firm committed to helping clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
This week, Governor Eric Holcomb announced he's lifting almost all of Indiana's COVID-19 restrictions. The state will move to its final reopening phase with one big caveat. The statewide mask-wearing order will remain in effect. Holcomb says Indiana's COVID numbers are trending in the right direction, but he still urges businesses, bars, restaurants, and individuals to exercise caution, even as he lifts capacity limits.
Physical distance between us, if we're around other folks, we've got our mask on, we have different schedules, really creative measures being implemented right now all over the state of Indiana.
There are still a few limitations. Bar customers must be seated, and both bars and restaurants must enforce social distancing. And events with more than 500 people must get approval from the local health department. Democratic gubernatorial candidate Dr. Woody Myers sharply criticized Holcomb's decision, which he called simply wrong. In a statement, the former state health commissioner says Indiana needs more vigilance, not less. Is this the right move for Indiana? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike O'Brien, John Schwanes, host of Indiana Lawmakers, and Nikki Kelly, State House reporter for the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette. I'm Indiana Public Broadcasting State House reporter Brandon Smith. Ann Delaney, just about every single one of Indiana's COVID-19 metrics has been trending in the right direction, and not for a few days, but for weeks. Was now the right time to largely lift these restrictions?
We don't know that. You know, obviously he's under tremendous pressure from the Trump administration to reopen the economy. And I understand that. People want to get back to work. They want to get back to doing the things they did. If they use the masks and if they practice social distancing, we know those two things work. We know that's what's slowing down the COVID outbreak in Indiana and wherever the people are following those guidelines. So I don't know. When we open up to groups in the hundreds, obviously, then we're taking much more of a risk with this. I hope that people still use common sense and keep the masks on and socially distance, because otherwise the outbreak that everybody's predicting for this winter will be much worse here. And that would really be, if we had to close up again, it would be devastating for our economy.
Mike O'Brien, Ann just pointed out that, and this has been true during the entire pandemic, all of the things that the government is trying to do only work if people actually cooperate and follow these restrictions or these guidelines or whatever. Is there any concern then, though, that the message that this sends, which is things are getting better, we're opening up these capacity limits, we're opening up things to larger groups being able to gather without getting approval from health departments, that sort of thing, are we worried that the message that sends, which is things are getting better, is underdone if people then think, oh, well, I don't need to follow some of these, you know, I don't need to worry about the masks as much. I don't need to worry about social distancing as much. Are we worried about a mixed message there?
I don't think so. I think people have largely complied with this. The numbers are clearly going the right direction. The unique positivity rate, which is a key metric, is under 4%, which is far down a lot from obviously the high in the spring. And look, I mean, the original point, let's not forget what the original point here was. It wasn't to shut everything down until there's a cure in this, or, you know, until it magically disappears. It was to manage hospital capacities. And the metric was, are people dying who shouldn't from this because they couldn't get the care that they needed? And so this was always about, remember in the spring, it was flatten the curve. And that message has evolved because different states have handled this different ways or set new goals. It was always about preserving hospital capacity, making sure people could get the care that they needed, because the death rate is so low for people that do contract it. And we've done that, and we've maintained that hospital capacity. Unique positivity cases are down, and all of these numbers are trending in the right direction. But you're correct. I mean, people are going to continue to have to take personal responsibility and put the measures in place that they're now kind of used to implementing in their own lives.
John Schwanes, the governor talks about the decision, the data, driving his decision-making. He said that from day one of the pandemic. But we also know that particularly those in his own party have been grating under these restrictions that he's put in place since the beginning of the pandemic. And those voices have gotten louder recently as to got to reopen, this is unconstitutional, et cetera, et cetera. We are now also a little more than a month away from the election when a lot, and some Hoosiers are already casting their votes. So even if it wasn't the overriding concern, how much did what Governor Holcomb was hearing from members of his own party play into this decision?
Well, I'm sure it was a role. It had to be. You know, think back to earlier in the summer. Remember, this was all going to happen on the 4th of July. That was going to be the big coming out party, if you will. And we could finally dispense with all of the restrictions and the masks and so forth. And I made the point at the time that I didn't think that that timing was accidental, but there was certainly a symbolism, an eye toward, you know, the notion of Independence Day. We're going to celebrate. We're going to be free. It's good for business, good for politics. And I think that somebody somewhere has a mind or an eye on the calendar in this instance, too. I think certainly there's pressure coming from the White House and any number of Republicans in the state, some for political reasons, others simply because they want to get back to, quote unquote, normal. So I think that certainly had to play a role.
Yeah. Nikki, the capacity limits are all gone now, bars and restaurants particularly, but they also still, those businesses still and locations still have to abide by social distancing guidelines, which is 6 feet, you know, table to table, for instance. So how much is really changing here?
I mean, not a lot, and that's what I'm hearing, actually, is I feel like the governor's kind of damned if he does, damned if he doesn't. You know, some people say, oh, no, we're going too fast, and other people looked at what he announced on Wednesday and said, well, nothing different. If you still can only have enough tables 6 feet apart, most restaurants probably can still only seat 75%, so they're just taking sort of the number out, but the actual practical impact is the same.
All right, well, now the watching of the data, I shouldn't say begins because we keep doing that, but they'll be watching that closely. The orders only go through, I think, about mid-October, so they will review them again around then. Well, both of Indiana's U.S. senators say the Senate should vote to confirm President Trump's nominee to the Supreme Court before the November 3rd election. The vacancy was created by the death of Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Democrats urged the GOP Senate to wait before voting on a replacement. They cite how Republicans blocked President Obama's nominee in 2016. But Republican Senator Mike Braun says he doesn't think Trump's nominee should be delayed.
We do control the presidency and the Senate, and I think for the majority of Hoosiers that elected me, they'd be disappointed if we didn't do it.
4 years ago, when he was running for the Senate, Republican Senator Todd Young said the American people should weigh in before the Senate voted on a Supreme Court nominee. It was about principle and process, he said. Now he's ready to move forward.
We will act because the American people want us to act. The people of Indiana in particular want me to act.
Young said any of the candidates for the position that President Trump has proposed in recent weeks would be strong nominees. He singled out Amy Coney Barrett, a federal appellate judge from Indiana. Braun also said he doesn't see an electoral downside for Republicans.
This not only helps key Senate races, it also has that synergistic effect of helping the president as well.
It's likely there are enough Senate votes to approve the nomination. Mike O'Brien, quite frankly, does it matter that so many Republican senators are contradicting what they said just 4 years ago?
Oh, there's plenty of hypocrisy to go around in this one. I mean, President Obama, you'll recall President Obama's chant in 2016 to the U.S. Senate was do your job and vote and take a vote. So everybody, I love Mike Braun's approach, actually, because it's the only honest one in the group. This is going to help us in the election. So at least he took what is consistent through all of this, and that is both parties are going to do what's in their own political best interest, and that's what's happening here. But to just point the finger at Republicans and say they're being hypocritical, it tells you half the story.
Ann Delaney, Republicans controlled the Senate going into 2016. Then they widened that margin in the 2016 elections. They were able to keep the margin in the 2018, and I think even widened a little further still in the 2018 elections. So is the reality here that if the American people, or at least enough American people, didn't want them to vote on a Supreme Court nominee, then they should have delivered a Democratic majority at any point in the last 4 years?
Well, I'm not sure that many people in 2016 cast their ballot on the basis of the Supreme Court nominations. That was 9 months before the election, as opposed to 6 weeks, which is what we're talking about here. What's interesting about this is that Donald Trump wants a trumpet on the U.S. Supreme Court. He wants somebody who's going to repeal Obamacare. He's going to find it unconstitutional. She's going to find it unconstitutional. She's going to take 750,000 Hoosiers' insurance away from them in the middle of a pandemic. It's going to take away existing coverage for millions of people nationwide, and it's going to take away lifetime caps. And he wants somebody there who is going to declare him the victor even when he loses the election. He has said that publicly now, that he is not about to give up and have an orderly transition of power when he loses the election. That is frightening in a democracy. And the idea that they are rushing to judgment on somebody that they can barely hold hearings on, especially somebody who hasn't even been on the Seventh Circuit but a couple of years and has had some very weird decisions come out her way. I mean, those kinds of things, it seems to me, show that the hypocrisy is there. But it's more important than the hypocrisy. It's about the repeal of pre-existing conditions and lifetime caps. And then the orderly transition of power, and then Roe v. Wade.
Well, we're going to talk a little bit more about that last one here in a minute. But Nikki Kelly, I wanted to ask you, Mike Braun says he thinks that this fight over the Supreme Court that will happen while people are already voting is going to help Republicans in their Senate races and the president. Do you think that's true?
Right. I frankly think it's going to invigorate both sides. I mean, Democrats are going to be, you know, wanting to push their Senate candidates just in case they don't get this vote through by Election Day. But then again, we also have this whole group of people out there who, this is just why everyone or so many people are disillusioned.
Right.
Because no one by their word, and the rules change every couple of years depending on who it benefits. And I get why that's frustrating to people. Yeah.
John Schwanes, we've also heard along with the outcry over the speed at which Republicans will move here, calls to pack the court if Joe Biden wins the presidency and Democrats take the Senate. Do you think that has now become more likely?
There will be attempts, I think, to do that if this plays out in the manner you're suggesting with the question. We've seen that before. Let's go back to, FDR and his attempts to pack the court. It was probably a bad idea then. It's probably a bad idea now. Because where do you stop? I mean, if you don't like the numbers at 9 and you don't like them at 15, do you go to 20, 25, 50? Pretty soon it's going to be the Supreme Court will have to meet in the House or Senate chambers because they won't fit in the current courtroom where they hold oral arguments. So I think the sad thing in all of this is, and I guess I'm going to sound a little naive or idealistic, that, you know, we expect certain partisan strife in the legislative branch, and certainly in the executive branch as well. And I know, I mean, the courts are certainly political creatures as well, but, you know, we kind of like to think that that's at least below the surface. And this really brings to the forefront the notion, I think, in a lot of people's minds, that the court is simply another, you know, blatant partisan, you know, if President X or Y appoints the majority of the, of the 9 seats, well, then that's going to be, don't even need to have oral arguments. Don't even have to write the opinions because we all know how it's going to turn out. And to me, that's a disappointment. Roberts used to like to say that call balls and strikes, but I guess what pitch is coming off the pitcher's mound before it even leaves the pitcher's hand kind of takes some of the fun out of the game.
All right. Well, time
I don't think that's happened in the Supreme Court, though. John Roberts is a great example of it.
A majority of the court appointed by presidents who did not get a majority of the vote. And that is not representative of the people. The public now, with polls, say, wait till after the election, and they're not going to do it.
Well, the people have the right to weigh in on November 3rd and leading up to that, I suppose. Time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Eismiller email and text alerts. This week's question, will President Trump's Supreme Court nominee be confirmed by the Senate before the November 3rd election? A yes or B no. Last week we asked you if you think any future COVID-19 relief packages from Congress will include financial support for state and local governments, as so many have asked for, including here in Indiana. Only 21% say that'll happen. 79% say no. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to WFYI.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Well, as I alluded to a little while ago, the death of Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg could have huge implications for the future of reproductive rights and access to abortion. And this week, the candidates for Indiana governor weighed in on that controversial issue. Indiana anti-abortion advocates have pushed legislation for years that would ban and criminalize all abortions in the state. Justice Ginsburg's death will likely only fuel that push. Governor Eric Holcomb says he's opposed to abortions, except when it would endanger the life of the pregnant person.
That I'll leave to the doctor to decide from a medical standpoint.
Democratic candidate Dr. Woody Myers says it's important for women to have the conversation about abortion with their doctor and their clergy.
But it's a decision that I think that the state of Indiana should stay out of.
Libertarian Donald Rainwater says it's unlikely a total abortion ban would ever reach the governor's desk, but he says he'd probably sign it if it did. Nikki Kelly, Brian Bosma, as Speaker of the House, stood resolutely pretty against moving this total abortion ban legislation forward in the past. But are we about to see a much bigger push than we've seen before for that in 2021?
Oh, I expect we'll see it all over the country and here in Indiana. The same bill gets filed every year. Bosma stopped it before. Now we have a new speaker in Todd Houston. I think it'll be really hard in a brand new speakership to hold back that conservative faction of his caucus. So it wouldn't surprise me at all if it passed.
John Schwanes, if Speaker Todd Houston wants to stop this bill, which we do not know that he does or not, it's possible that he will support its passage, but if he does want to hold off on that, will it help to be able to say, listen, we've got all these other things to do. We've got COVID-19 to deal with and a new state budget and all of that. Will that help him if he tries to halt this bill's advancement like his predecessor did?
Well, certainly he could try that approach. We've seen it in the past. But in the past, when the speaker and committee chairs did sort of make that same argument, now granted, COVID was not on the agenda, but there were other pressing issues the state was facing that were seen at the time as critical. Did it stop some lawmakers from seeing this as their primary purpose during the legislative session, which was to introduce and do everything possible to advance that bill? No, it didn't stop those individuals. And so I don't think that if Todd Houston were to try that same approach, that it would be any more effective than it has been in the past. If anything, I think you'll see Republicans who from this wing of the party who feel emboldened by what they've seen playing out in Washington and around the country. And I think the drumbeat to at least have some consideration of the bill will be pretty strong.
Mike, what's the likelihood that a bill like that gets a hearing, gets a vote on the floor of either chamber, and that it passes and makes its way to the governor's desk?
Depends on a lot of things. I think it depends on who the chair of the of those public policy committees is. I think that we'll maybe see some movement on those in those areas after the election. And Speaker Houston's new, you know, and new leaders sometimes react to those kind of pressures differently. But I think, like Brian Bosma, Todd Houston, one, he's from a moderate part of the state. He has a very moderate district. And I think he understands pretty well that Hoosier Republicans haven't been rewarded politically for dabbling in extreme wings of social issues.
Ann Delaney, do you think the General Assembly passes a total abortion ban in 2021?
I think if Roe v. Wade is overturned, this battle is going to be fought out in 50 legislatures across the country. And we know that Eric Holcomb is not in favor of choice. He's in favor of when the person, a person, I assume he means a woman.
That's how I phrased it, not how he phrased it.
Okay. All right. Good. I'm glad to hear that because I was a little struck by that terminology there. But I think that what you're going to do is you're going to see this because the Republican Party, particularly in Indiana and in a lot of other states where gerrymandering's been so effective, are dominated by their right wing. They're dominated by the right wing, I don't want to say nut jobs, but nonetheless, who want to argue for things like having the legislature elect the senators instead of direct election of senators, things that have been fought out hundreds of years ago. So, yeah, I think this will be, and it will be, will take everything that Houston has to try to stop it, and I'm not sure he's going to be strong enough to do that.
And again, we don't know that he wants to. President Donald Trump and Democratic nominee Joe Biden will meet next week in the first presidential debate of this year's general election cycle. There will be three debates in total, September 29th in Cleveland, October 15th in Miami, and October 22nd in Nashville. There's also a vice presidential debate, October 7th in Salt Lake City. The second presidential debate was originally set for Notre Dame University in South Bend, but university officials begged off, citing COVID-19 issues. The first debate will be moderated by Fox News' Chris Wallace. His chosen topics are the Trump and Biden records, the Supreme Court, COVID-19, the economy, race and violence in our cities, and the integrity of the election. John Schwanes, what sort of impact do you think the debates will have?
I think they could have a significant impact. I think a lot of people will be watching. I expect high ratings, not only because people are still trapped to a certain extent in their homes, so nothing to do, but I think people are going to be watching. I don't know if they're necessarily going to be paying close attention to policy nuances as much as just the sort of the theatrics and sort of the drama that unfolds almost as if you were watching a boxing match, or maybe more appropriately, professional wrestling, what kind of moves are employed here. I don't think the president has done himself any favors necessarily. You know, conventional wisdom would dictate that when you play the expectation game, you want to say that your opponent is God's gift to debating. And so, the bar is set high. In this case, the president has suggested that Joe Biden, could barely utter his own name because of some sort of cognitive decline or any number of other issues that Sleepy Joe, as the president would call him, might have. So to me, Donald Trump has set the bar to his own detriment, very low for Joe Biden. So if Joe Biden basically comes out and says, you're an idiot, Donald Trump, people will say, look, there's a whole sentence. And, I don't believe this whole notion now about Joe Biden being too old or being in some state of cognitive decay.
Nikki Kelly, are there enough undecided voters left for these debates to make a difference?
I would say normally no, but I do think John hit on something exactly right. The Republicans are pushing this narrative that Joe Biden is basically mentally deficient. So, and can't, needs a teleprompter to say anything. So I think that actually puts far more emphasis on the debates than we would see in a normal year. And, I think as long as, like John said, as long as Joe Biden even delivers a passable thing, he's basically succeeded.
And Eleni, if you were advising the Biden campaign, what do you think is the key for them to make these debates work for the Democratic ticket?
I think he has to be himself. He has to show the amount of knowledge he has, which is tremendous, in sharp contrast with the incumbent. And he has to show his demeanor and demeanor and personality that he's suited to be president, unlike, again, the incumbent. If he's up there and he is talking about issues with knowledge and in depth, which is something Donald Trump can't do, I think people are going to be very, very impressed with his performance. And then you put him next to somebody who can't speak in a simple declarative sentence. And if he takes the word very out of his vocabulary, he can't even speak. So I think they're going to be very impressed. And I think there are a number of people yet undecided. They begin to focus now on this. And I think it's a tremendous opportunity for Joe Biden to show that he has the leadership potential that Donald Trump does not.
Mike, a version of the same question. If you were advising the Trump campaign, what do you think is the key to making it work for the Republican ticket?
Man, I wish Donald Trump would use a teleprompter once in a while. But look, I mean, there's going to be a clear contrast in not only style, but message here. I think it's going to be kind of must-see TV. I do think there's a lot of independent voters left. I think there's a swath in the middle that's swinging back and forth. I think they were heading clearly in Joe Biden's direction at the end of the summer. I think the riots kind of eliminated the edge Democrats had on calmness and order, kind of a normalness being restored. And so I think if Donald Trump can communicate a message that there's a path to the future that leads to an America you recognize, then I think that's the message that he's got to. I got to stick with.
All right. Well, finally, it was reported.
I just said what I would advise them.
It was reported this week that former South Bend mayor and presidential candidate Pete Buttigieg will be playing Mike Pence in debate prep for Kamala Harris. And Delaney, who would you go with as a stand-in for Mike Pence?
Oh, I think Pete Buttigieg is for a stand-in for Mike Pence.
Yes.
Oh, God. Somebody very pious and very sincere. And very adoring of Donald Trump. That's who I pick. And I can't figure, besides Mike Pence, one person who fits that category.
Pious and sincere. I think that's the nicest thing you've said about Mike Pence in a really long time on this show, Ian.
Well, he drew that.
That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike O'Brien, John Schwannis of Indiana Lawmakers, and Nikki Kelly of the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/IWIR, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity and on the WFYI app. I'm Brandon Smith of Indiana Public Broadcasting. Stay safe, stay healthy, and wear a mask, and join us next time, because a lot can happen in the Indiana week.
Indiana Week in Review is made possible by the supporters of Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations and by Ice Miller. Ice Miller is a full-service law firm committed to helping clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com. The opinions expressed are solely those of the panelists. Indiana Week in Review is a WFYI production in association with Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations.